Your world, your challenges, your faith. When faith within engages the world without, there's power. It's living life from the inside out.
Journalists and aid workers are kidnapped, children are shot in school buildings, and revelers at holiday parties. The randomness of lethal violence and its increasing frequency remind us of the potency of terrorism. Terrorism intends to instill fear, but Jesus told us not to be afraid. The Holy Spirit of God lives in those who follow Christ, and that means we have power, love, and self-discipline, not fear. And yet, I'm Martha Menikas Foster with this edition of Inside Out, where we're talking with author, leadership coach, and speaker Amy Simpson. Amy's recently written the hermeneutics blog post, If We Can't Fear Not, Let's Fear Better. Welcome, Amy, to Inside Out.
Thank you. It's so great to be here with you, Martha.
Amy, I'm really looking forward to where our conversation can go today. You've written a book titled Anxious, Choosing Faith in a World of Worry. So let's start here. Do we have reason to fear? And if we do, do we have more reason to fear now than in the past?
Yeah, great question. And, you know, the background of this question for people often is this idea that, you know, we aren't supposed to be afraid. We aren't supposed to experience fear. And that's really a misconception. We do have reason to fear. And fear is actually a gift given to us by God. Mm-hmm. You know, if you think about what would our lives be like if we didn't experience fear, well, they would be very short.
Well, yeah.
You know, we wouldn't make it very far because fear is something that teaches us and that enables us to get ourselves out of situations where we might otherwise be hurt or protect others from situations where they might otherwise be hurt. So, yes, we do have reasons to fear in this world, and that will always be true. That's part of the experience of life on this planet. And again, it's not a bad thing to feel fear or to feel afraid. But I don't really think we do have more reasons to fear than people have experienced, than we've experienced, and especially our ancestors have experienced in previous years. If you look at our times in the grand scheme of human history, most of human history has been scarier in many ways than the time we live in right now. Now, we deal with some things that have never been dealt with before. You know, the size of our world is in many ways smaller than it's ever been. So we face things regularly that people in other times wouldn't have dreamed of because they just weren't aware of or they didn't have access to other parts of the world that to us are seem very close. But in other ways, our world is far less scarier. We have far more control over disease. We have many ways to protect ourselves that people didn't have in the past. And because we are so connected in our world, we have the opportunity to deal with conflicts sometimes in ways that weren't available to people in the past. So I think if you add it all up, we probably don't have more reasons to fear than we did before, but we do have some new things that people haven't encountered before, and that can seem very scary. Just compound the fear just because it's new.
And because then we don't have anything to look back on as a way to deal with this kind of danger, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, you know, if you face something before and you've conquered it or you've survived it, your experience the next time you face that same thing, your reaction to that is going to be different because you have a level of confidence that comes from your previous survival or your previous victory. And even being able to look back and say, well, my parents lived through that or my grandparents lived through that can help us. So when we're talking about something like Islamic fundamentalist terrorism, well, that has happened before, but it's been a really long time.
Yes, yes, right.
You know, and so we can't look at our own experience and point to the people directly preceding us and say, well, you know, this has always been around. Mm-hmm. It seems like something new that we haven't faced before, and just the novelty of it itself can make something seem even more scary.
Yeah, I think we've become more and more aware of how little we can do to protect the people we love from the possibility of harm. More and more college students travel Europe. Now, it suddenly seems like maybe that's not such a great idea when it did seem like a fantastic idea as far as growing independent, seeing the world. There's more reason to think that may not be so safe. But when it really comes down to what can I control in the lives of the people I love to keep them from the possibility of harm, there's nothing really new to the fact that I don't have control. Or do you disagree with me?
No, I definitely don't disagree with you. That's exactly right. You know, I think what has changed for many people is the illusion of control.
Aha, uh-huh, you know, yeah, okay.
For many of us, we've been living under this this delusion to a degree that we have more control, that we can keep ourselves safe, that we can keep our loved ones safe. And the fact is, you know, we have tools at our disposal to do that. It's not as if we are utterly exposed and vulnerable necessarily, but we have never been safe. Mm-hmm. And what's changed is, you know, we are seeing reality for what it is a little bit more than we maybe did when we were growing up. Mm-hmm. You know, so we can't quite fool ourselves all the time into believing that we are safe, because we are not. We have never been safe, and neither were our ancestors. I'm a big fan of history, so I'm always looking at things through that lens. But if you look back and look through time periods, if you study them, there, I guarantee you, you cannot find any period in human history where you can say people were safe, you know, where any people were safe. Maybe, you know, an isolated pocket here or there. We're sheltered, just like we have been for most of our lives, but we have not been truly safe. And that's not something new. You know, one of the things that has changed is because of the way we receive information and the quantity of information that we have at our disposal, we know more about some of the threats than we would have known about before.
Sure, I absolutely agree with that.
So sometimes it's just a matter of knowledge reaching a level where it kind of overwhelms us, because I don't believe we have the emotional capacity to handle all the information that is at our disposal every day.
Right.
So sometimes it's a matter of being overwhelmed by the knowledge that we have or the knowledge that we encounter. And also, our news media have become very savvy at selling their product.
All right.
It's available to us 24 hours a day. So not only do we have all this information available, but there are people who are actively pushing it on us, and they know that the way to get us clicking on their headlines or turning on the channel or keeping the TV on or, you know, whatever it is to incite some kind of emotional reaction in us, and often the most effective one is fear. So there are people who are using our fear to keep us watching their shows or buying their products or giving into their marketing messages for the sake of running their businesses and expanding them. So we have to be aware of that too. Sometimes when we feel overwhelmed by fear, it's not because anything has changed in our lives. It's just because we are listening to too much, or we're allowing people to play on this fear reaction within us when we might not otherwise feel that as overwhelmingly.
I mean, it certainly brings up the question whether or not deciding to shelter yourself, is that a wise decision? Come kind of a pietistic community where we live separately. Of course, there are groups of people who do this. That is an option, just to say, I won't be listening at all so that I won't be listening too much. And that could take us in a different direction altogether. When you're talking about us never having really had control, would it be a little bit like the family that has cancer erupt? It is unexpected. It's not part of anything hereditary, nothing that they were looking for. And they realize that they never really understood how out of control they were about the health and safety of someone in their family. Is there a way of saying that we suddenly as a culture realize how vulnerable we are, but we always were?
I do think there's an element of that present here. You know, over the weekend, I was visiting family, and I actually was at kind of a family reunion in the Kansas City area.
Mm-hmm.
And we went to this fantastic National World War I museum that they have there.
Mm.
And one of the things that was interesting was they featured the first few years of the war before the United States got involved.
Right.
And then they had, you know, the second half of the exhibit, which was the United States' role in World War I. And in between, they had this movie that was showing that was kind of talking about the decision to get involved in the war. You know, what was happening culturally in the United States at that time and the different forces that were pushing our nation one way or the other. And this reminds me of that, too, because, you know, at that time, the United States had very much an isolationist policy,
right.
And we weren't a world power. We weren't anywhere near a superpower like we are now, but we had this sense that we're just not going to get involved. We don't want to have anything to do with those conflicts in Europe. Mm-hmm. You know, we've left all that behind. We have this new world here. That's their problem. This is our society. This is our part of the world. And that worked for a while in terms of the mindset of the American people. But eventually they reached a point where everybody kind of had to admit, we can't stay out of this.
Mm-hmm.
This is coming to us. and they almost had no choice, I think. Mm-hmm. But so that was a situation where for a few years, people were able to fool themselves into believing if we just ignore this or we just stay out of it, we're going to be safe. And that wasn't true. You know, Americans were being attacked in other parts of the world. Germany was attacking American ships and sinking them with their submarines. You know, the Germans tried to make a pact with Mexico to attack the United States. I mean, we were part of it. We just didn't want to believe that we were
right,
part of it.
Right.
And eventually, it had to come to bloodshed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was just going to happen. So I think it's an apt analogy for a lot of times for what we've been living with. You know, we've been living with this idea that we are safer if we just ignore it, or we just don't pay attention, or we just, you know, keep telling ourselves that we're safe, or if we just have a strong enough military, then we can be friends with everyone, or we will be safe. And that's just not the way life works. It's not the way the human experience is. And unfortunately, trying to keep everybody else out will not keep us safe, because we are as dangerous as they are. The danger, the greatest danger that we face in this world is our fellow human beings. You know, it's within us, and it's within all of us. Now, what's also true, just as true as it always has been, is that God is sovereign over this world, that he is presiding over a much bigger and greater plan than simply keeping us safe.
Yes, absolutely. But before we talk about the difference that knowing and believing in God makes, which is going to be a great part of this conversation, why don't you talk to us a little bit about what it means, the phrase that you use in your blog post about living chronically on guard. I mean, in some ways, by me thinking I have control over the safety of the people in my life, the people I care about, the situations I care about, I go into a kind of overdrive in my uber controlling of situations, thinking that if we just do this, this, and this, and enough seatbelts and enough mace spray in the pocket, making sure that we're ready for every contingency, we think we might have some sort of control, and then we're chronically on guard. What does that do to us physically, and what does it do to us spiritually? And do you see that there's some repercussions to the people we care about that it might actually harm them?
Yeah, it's a great question. And actually, being chronically on guard does hurt us. It does hurt us physically in multiple ways, one of which, you know, it really starts in the brain. And this is such a frontier of science right now. They're constantly learning more about how our brains work. Neuroscientists have been able to identify some of the effects that chronic fear and worry have on the brain. And, you know, basically there's an area of the brain called the amygdala that is the fear center of the brain that's also responsible for other things. And when that part of the brain is constantly engaged, it takes its toll. It actually harms our brains.
Huh.
Which in turn changes the way we think. You know, as we devote ourselves to certain thought patterns, those thought patterns become like grooves in our brain, you know, paths that our thoughts continue to go through, and eventually it becomes habitual. We kind of lose control of that process where we're not thinking that way intentionally. It's just happening all the time.
So when we see that somebody seems to be in some sort of a loop, right? Or
exactly.
Or we call it a rut almost, right? But
exactly.
But we keep going back and something triggers and we're on this loop. We don't know where the off-ramp is, right? You're
exactly.
saying that this is actually physiological.
It is. It is physiological, yes. So we produce these paths in our brain, and there are other parts of our brains, you know, other pathways, neural pathways, that don't get used so much. And some of those neural pathways might be much better for us, might be much truer, but we're not using them. So that's just one of the reasons therapy is helpful and works for people, is because, you know, sometimes we need help to go in and intentionally change those patterns and wear some new grooves in our brain that are true, that are helpful to us and to other people around us. So the more we are stuck in this fear mindset, the more we're embracing worry, the more some of those bad patterns get established in our brains, and it really does undermine the functioning of our brains physically. It also undermines our faith, you know, because it changes the way we think. It can cause us to become obsessed with one piece of the truth, you know, that maybe this piece of the truth that says, I'm not safe, is where we get stuck or where we stop. But there are lots of other pieces of the truth, too, like the fact that God is in control, like the fact that there is life beyond this one, you know, like the fact that there is love here, too. There is hope here, too. So when we get really stuck in this being chronically on guard or being fearful as like our overriding way of being for a long time, mm-hmm. it undermines our faith. It interferes with our relationship with God. It also interferes with our relationships with others. It affects the way we interact with them. So, you know, if we are, for example, constantly trying to keep our children safe above all else, we will interfere with their growth in other ways.
Right.
You know, there are times when they need to have the experience of overcoming something that scares them and that scares us.
Right.
But if we're only trying to keep them safe, we're going to keep them from experiencing that thing that would be an incredible growth opportunity for them, for example. You know, and when we're fearful, we tend to become very self-focused. That's one of the biggest problems. Hmm. Being chronically on guard encourages us to focus on protecting ourselves above all else,
mm-hmm.
because those short-term coping skills kick in, things like those self-protective impulses.
Right.
So things like staying away from things that are unfamiliar or people we don't know,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, that kind of things. Those things can be helpful to us. They can be helpful in certain situations and certain times. They're not the way we were meant to live long term.
Right. So we're taking a short term coping mechanism that can be good, and we're turning it into a lifestyle.
So we
exclude people. There's no real good reason for us to be excluding. And as people who love Jesus, we are not supposed to exclude.
Exactly. So it completely changes the way we tend to interact with other people, because we are elevating our own safety above things like loving others,
mm-hmm.
or things
right.
like seeking the common good for everyone, or things like getting to know new people or having new experiences.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. As I've looked at the lives of my own children and the people that I know and that I love, I've wondered if, because the youngest of the millennials and those who have come since, they've not known a world, they've not really known a world that didn't have 9/11, an attack on our shores that made the whole country both, in some sense, cohesive, but cohesive in a way that was bound around fear and about drawing strength from each other, yes, but also about being more isolated in some ways, saying
yeah.
that this is us and everybody else is a them. How has that changed the way that they look at things that could instill fear? Is it something that's made them cavalier because the world has always been a very fearful place in a very obvious way in images on the phones that they carry and on the televisions? Or has it made them more fearful?
Yeah, it's a great question. And I would actually be interested in seeing some kind of official study on
right,
that,
sure.
Which I haven't. So I can't give expert feedback, but I'm raising a couple of these people myself. and as I think about my experience and probably your experience, you know, growing up in the Cold War years, mm-hmm. for example, and you look at the difference between the way our society was reacting to that in, say, the 50s and 60s versus, say, the 70s and 80s, mm-hmm. when many of the realities were still the same in terms of the Cold War. But by the time I came along, you know, we weren't having bomb raid drills and,
mm-hmm. right.
you know, that kind of thing in schools. It was just like, this is the reality that we live in. This is the soup we were born into.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it caused us fear. It caused us anxiety. But I think it caused us less fear and anxiety than it did those who, you know, who were there at the beginning, who saw it developing.
Yeah, so people who saw the before and the after, who somehow thought of the days before that as somehow better.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. Because I think part of fear, many times, is fear of loss. So it's not just that we fear that fundamentalist terrorists are going to come over here and kill my family.
Okay.
Although that certainly is something that some people are actively afraid of.
Uh-huh.
But another thing that they're afraid of with that, I think, is our life as we know it is going to change.
And we're going to lose that precious, whatever that precious part of our life is. Okay.
Exactly. So something here is going to be taken from me. And that gets mixed up in this whole thing. So it becomes part of what we're fearful of. Part of the emotion we're experiencing around fear is this fear of loss, or maybe grief or trauma over what we have experienced. You know, those of us who were adults on 9/11, that image of those planes plowing into those buildings, you know, coming down,
mm-hmm.
we'll never forget
right.
that image.
Right.
And we experienced it, you know, on that day. We saw it, and it was traumatic for us, even if we were thousands of miles away from it. It felt it was an attack on us.
Mm-hmm.
For, you know, my daughter, who was 18 months old when
right.
that happened,
right.
she knows about it, she's learned about it, but she didn't experience it on that day. So I think there's an element of trauma for us that they don't necessarily have. So I do think it's a little bit different. You know, you adapt to the world that you're born into. Sometimes kids are born into, not necessarily here, but even in other parts of the world, are born into horrific circumstances, and they learn to adapt very quickly to those circumstances. That's the world they know, and they don't experience that sort of loss and grief and trauma necessarily over just the situation they're in. So I think they do tend to be a little less fearful over some of the things that scare us, even though our fear certainly rubs off on them.
Well, there's another question altogether, right? Yes,
yeah.
Yes. What is their personal experience, and what is the experience that we are giving them, you know,
exactly,
as the people who are trying to teach them to be very, very safe and very, very careful, right? So in all of this, as people who believe in Jesus Christ, who believe that the Holy Spirit is supposed to empower us to not be fearful, and then we're actually recognizing in ourselves fear, what difference does it make that we follow the creator of everything, the one who says that he empowers us? What difference does it make in the way that we live in this world? And then if you could, since you've been really thinking about this and looking into it, are there ways in which, as we see ourselves, if we're self-aware enough to say, hey, I'm starting to get either into a rut in fear or I'm feeling fearful, are there things that we can use as a self-check, a couple questions we can ask ourselves that can help us get realigned with the fact that there are good and wonderful things in this world and we have a good and wonderful creator who oversees all of it?
Yeah, great questions. I believe it makes an enormous difference, the fact that we are following the creator of everything, who has not only the power to create, but also the power to destroy, and who someday will destroy and recreate the world that we live in. There is no power on earth that can compete with that. No creative power and no destructive power. So, you know, if we really believe that's the God we follow, then should change everything for us. It does change everything for us if we really believe what he says. Now, that doesn't mean we won't experience fear. And I think sometimes people get confused by that because they feel like I'm still experiencing fear. But again,
I don't have enough faith. I must not be believing well enough. Something
exactly.
like that? Okay.
Yeah, exactly. Or God hasn't, you know, taken this away from me. But there is a degree to which we, again, we have to have fear. We have to experience that. And the same thing is true of anxiety. We tend to really shame anxiety and fear in our culture, and ironically, to embrace worry as a lifestyle.
Yeah, that is something, isn't it?
And it really should be the other way around, you know, where we don't want to give fear first place in our lives. We don't want to give anxiety first place in our lives. We don't want to engage in the habit of worry, but the fact that we have fear and anxiety means we are fully functioning human beings, and that's a good thing.
Yeah.
So I think it's important to kind of distinguish between those three things and understand the difference between them and go ahead and acknowledge to God that we do live in a place where we are fearful and where we have reason to fear. But that's different from living a lifestyle where fear has first place in our lives or where it is overriding things like love. Things like faith, things like our openness to new people and new things. But the fact that we follow this great creator who is sovereign over all also should mean that we have a different perspective, a bigger perspective. It's not just about me. The objective of my life on this earth is not for me to stay safe and live as long as possible. That is not my purpose. That is not the purpose of anyone here. We have a much bigger and more important purpose, and for many of us, it means our lives will be short.
Right.
Or
right.
painful.
Right.
So, you know, I think that's part of what should be happening in us, and it does happen in us when we really believe what God tells us, you know, when we have the courage to immerse ourselves in his truth and to accept the things that we learn from that. I think for many people, part of our fear is a resistance to that idea. Because
sure.
we really do, we want to cling to what we have.
We fall in love with being alive. We fall in love with the very good things that we should be reminding ourselves are out there in addition to the things we fear, right? But we fall in love with them. We want to be around for them, if we're honest, I think. We know that that's one of the things that pulls us.
We do, and that's okay. We should desire life. We should desire the good gifts that God gives us. But we cannot desire them more than him and his will for us. And we must recognize that the world we live in is never going to be the world God created. This one is never going to be the one that was there before humanity fell. It has been ruined forever until Christ comes and redeems all of his creation. So we cannot expect it to be the place we want it to be. Christians should have more courage to acknowledge that than anybody else. Mm-hmm. So we have to let go of some of the things that we cherish and wish for and long for now,
you know,
recognizing that we will have them someday and that our life now is about something else.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think as far as key questions we can ask ourselves or even key things we can do, it's very important, I think, to ask ourselves when we are really getting caught up in fear and worry and anxiety, to ask ourselves, you know, what is this thing that is causing me so much trouble here? Is it something that I have control over?
Okay, good. Yeah.
You know, is it something that God has actually placed in my life for me to be responsible for? Or am I trying to control something or someone that is not mine to control?
Mm-hmm.
That's a source of a lot of worry for us. I think another important question is, am I trying to live in the future? There's another hugely important, significant source of worry for us. You know, we tend to try to live where we cannot live.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to see the future, to discern, okay, what's going to happen? If only I knew what would happen, then I could make the right decision now, or I could sleep easy at night. And we have to let go of that because we can't.
So the definition of worry, that we're borrowing tomorrow's troubles? So we're trying to take something from the future, bring it into today, and there's nothing more that we can do by doing that. We don't have that power. Okay.
No. In fact, when you think about what is the future, it's actually, you know, if you look it up in the dictionary, you'll find the definitions are things like what will be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it never actually is. We never actually are in the future.
Right.
Always
right.
in the present, and that's all we've got. That's all we can act in. But so much of the time we waste what we have been given in the present, or we ignore it in favor of worrying over what has not been given to us in the future.
So we just traded away something much more delicious, right?
Exactly.
So, yes,
or
yes.
much more important. Or, you know, something that God has actually given us, and he may not give us the future.
Right.
Or the future might look completely different from what we could have predicted.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another one. You know, am I trying to live in the future? And another important one, I think, is am I trying to cling to things that really belong to God?
Mm. Do I take ownership? Have I staked a claim on something that's not mine?
Yeah, exactly. It's this concept of stewardship, which we often use the word stewardship only when we're talking about money. You know, maybe saving money, being responsible with our income.
Mm-hmm.
But the idea of stewardship extends to all of life. God is the owner of everything.
Including,
he is the owner of everyone.
Yeah, including those children that we dedicated at the altar.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So we have responsibility for the things and the people that God places in our lives. It's not like what we do doesn't matter. But we are not the ultimate owners. We are stewards here in place of the King, who is the owner of everything. And we need to act on his behalf. But ultimately, we have to let go and recognize that it is in his hands.
Mm-hmm.
Those are three really big things that fuel our worry, and they're three really big things, you know, to let go. They're really hard to change about the way we think. And for some people, addressing those issues is going to require some help. You know, it may require talking to a pastor or a spiritual director. It might require seeing a therapist and getting some help for changing those thought patterns that have formed those grooves in our brains.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people are living with anxiety that's out of control, that is actually causing things like panic attacks or stress to the point where it is impairing their functioning on a day-to-day basis, they may need to try using some medication for a time to help break them out of those thought patterns and get to a more healthy place, you know, working with a counselor or someone who can help them change the way they're thinking so that they can get out of that kind of situation.
Mm-hmm.
So there are things that we need to do to address those habits of worry and the size of fear often in our lives, the amount of real estate it takes up in our hearts and minds so that we can re-engage in the mission and purpose that God actually has for us in this life. Because if our number one cause and purpose in this world is not keeping ourselves safe, it's something else. You know, there is a reason that God has placed us here. And when we can get worry and fear sort of into their rightful places, then we have room in our lives to pursue the purpose and mission that God has actually given us.
Well, that's a very hopeful message. Thank you. Thank you so much, Amy. Thank you for your blog post, and thank you for joining us here on Inside Out.
Thank you. good talking with you.
My guest has been author, leadership coach, and speaker Amy Simpson. A link to her blog post, If We Can't Fear Not, Let's Fear Better, it's on the same page where you found this podcast and where you will also find a link to her book, Anxious, Choosing Faith in a World of Worry. All of this you'll find at fln.org/insideout. I'm Martha Manikas Foster with Inside Out on Family Life.